It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The annual Midwest Crane Count is set for this Saturday. Thousands of volunteers around Wisconsin and the Midwest will head out early in the morning to collect data about sandhill and whooping cranes.
Wisconsin had its first crane count in 1976. Since then, it's grown into a major citizen science project that helps monitor the crane population in the state and beyond. The annual survey gives scientists valuable data that informs conservation efforts and wetlands management.
Paul Robbins is dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and a professor of environmental studies and geography at UW-Madison. He previously served on the board of directors for the International Crane Foundation.
He spoke with producer Rochelle Wilson last week.
Well, so I was thinking about cranes because back in the fall, I had a couple of friends visiting from out of state. And they took a walk at a local park and they came back and they were like, we saw these giant birds, like giant dinosaurs.
Like the size of people.
they were kind of blown away by it. They come from Seattle. They don't have sandhill cranes there, and they'd never seen one. And I was thinking, you know, we might take these birds for granted, but what brings the cranes to Wisconsin?
Well, they come here to breed, to make more cranes. I mean, that's why they come back year in and year out there, you know, and they've been here a long time. So some of them are residents, but they're mostly migratory. So they come here when it's warm and it's wet and they love their wetlands and they are here to make more cranes. And then they go south. So these cranes, you'll see them as far as Florida. I've seen them walk on the beaches. And those are, that's like another Wisconsin, you know, snowbird.
I love that. Well, but that's not a given though, right? I mean, the crane population hasn't always been this robust. So what's that story?
So, right. No, do not take your cranes for granted. There are a million cranes in North America now. And probably when Aldo Leopold was writing the Sand Hill Almanac, the Sand County Almanac in the 1940s, there's maybe less than 1,000. Like they were gone. That's functionally extinct. Right? That's the end of the line. There's no way those are coming back. And even by 1970, there was probably only a few thousand. And in the last few decades, we've gone back to a million. It is the greatest success story in the history of North American conservation, unquestionably. You know, since 1970, we've lost one third of all bird life in North America. My 9-year-old son will grow up with a billion fewer birds in his world than I did growing up in the 1970s. So to have the cranes come back like that is a modern miracle. But it's not a miracle. It happened by the dint of people's hard work. And the cranes themselves are just super adaptive, clever people.
Well, give us an idea. I mean, we have the International Crane Foundation here. I remember when I was first looking into cranes and I was like, oh, International Crane Foundation, it's probably in D.C. or who knows where. Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Totally. Another unlikely story, right? So probably one of the most important international conservation organizations, period. Remember, it's not just a crane foundation. When you're saving cranes, what you're really doing is saving wetlands. And if you're saving wetlands, you're really saving ecosystems around the world. And there are cranes literally everywhere around the world, except maybe Antarctica and South America. So you're really the greatest wetlands organization in the world. And if you're saving wetlands, I'm not done, then you're saving all the people who live around them and make a living, whether they're rice farming or whether they're corn farming up here in Baraboo. So to have, that's a long way of saying, to have an international organization that does all that and they're in Baraboo, whoa. That's a happy accident. So the founders of the Crane Foundation in the 70s found this property up in Baraboo where they were going to experiment with the idea of restoring cranes, especially the whooping crane, which we should get back to. The whooping crane, you know, very, very difficult. Another case that's much slower on the return. And they found this property, this farm in Baraboo. So Wisconsin is blessed twice. It gets all the cranes and it gets probably one of the most important organizations in the history of conservation.
So what makes you such a crane enthusiast? You know, you're not a crane biologist.
No.
You're a guy who likes cranes. How'd you get hooked?
This is the crazy thing. I went to school here in the 1980s. I came from Colorado to go to school here. We have cranes in Colorado, it turns out. I'd never seen one. I came to school in Wisconsin and Madison. Used to go camping. Used to go up to Devil's Lake. Used to never saw cranes. I finally went to India to become an archaeologist, and I saw saurus crane, which are even bigger and sandhill crane. They're like 6 feet tall. They're giant and they mate for life. And they have this unison call that they make together, the mated pair. It was, they were like dinosaurs. And it absolutely, and there they were living in farm fields in one of the most densely populated agricultural parts of the world. And I thought, well, that's That's how it ought to be, like wild things living around people somehow making it in the world. And coming back to Wisconsin, I realized, oh my God, we have them here. Not only do we have them here, we have a history of having this really positive, recent anyway, positive relationship with these animals. And then I was hooked. I was hooked on cranes, and I couldn't see them. Then I see them everywhere. I go to Florida, there they are. You go to India, you'll see them all over the place. And anywhere in Wisconsin, you see them. You're walking down the lakeshore path, and there they are waddling in front of you with a colt right between them, this pair, this couple, just last fall, right? That I am hooked on cranes. And then when you run an educational organization dedicated to conservation and climate change and all the kinds of bad news stories that our students really come away from class feeling depressed, you want to be able to tell a story about a magical success. And magic is the wrong word because it again invokes the supernatural. While it might be spiritual, it's really like something people did to change the world for better.
Well, you captured my imagination once, telling me about going to the Platte River to see the migration. Once in a lifetime, right? Tell us about that.
Once in a lifetime, I go back every 2 years. So many times in a lifetime. It's like seeing, this is like seeing the wildebeest run in East Africa. You're watching a force of nature that happens at scale. So you're down on the Platte. It's cold as all get out, right? Make sure you layer up because I was underdressed the first time. I was shivering. My teeth were gnashing together and they're out there. You can hear them all night. They're making noise because there's 750,000 of them. So again, 1 million in North America, you can see most of them on one morning on the Platte. And the light comes up and then you see the river is covered in them as far as the eye can see. And as the light gets higher and they rise into the air in big groups, it's like they blacken the sky. They're so dense, it's so thick. And the movement of them as a group is spiritual. There's something bigger than you going on. It is a mass migration of animals, but they're all doing it individually. Like those are individual choices, each flight path, each the decision to get up and stretch and move around and argue with your neighbor. There's 750,000 people that fly down on the Platte. And it is, if you see it once, you can never go back. It doesn't matter what your background or your training, your political alignment or blah, 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 blah. Those trains being on the Platte will change your life.
We're talking about the annual Midwest Crane Count coming up on April 12th. Paul Robbins is here with us, Dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at UW-Madison, and as you heard, a longtime fan of cranes. So we've been talking about the cranes, and you did a little bit of a bird call earlier. Let's take a listen. So that first one was the whooping crane, and the second was the sandhill crane.
You get an A.
Do you usually hear them before you see them?
Oh, without question. So I hear them all around the neighborhood. Even I live here, you know, on the other side of the cemetery here in Madison. I hear them all the time. And like I said, down on the Platte, if you're staying down there anywhere, you stay in Grand Island, you stay near the river, you hear them all night. They're talking all night. I talked to Ann Lacey and some of these other, you know, real biologists, real scientists at the Crane Foundation. I say, what are they talking about? And she said, I don't know, which is just amazing because they're clearly having these communications all night long. You hear them long before you see them. And that's super helpful if you're a bird watcher. Most bird watchers know that you do it by ear and not by sight. My eyes are going anyway as I get older, but I can still hear really well. I love the call of cranes.
So we've got this crane count coming up on Saturday, April 12th. What exactly is this count? Why do we do it?
Oh, so we've done it for decades. Back before anybody had the word citizen science, I think of the word citizen science coming around 2000, 2010. This idea that the public cannot just be passive consumers of nature, but they can be active participants in the scientific process. They can count, observe things like phenology, the changing of the seasons, record it, upload it, to a website and participate in global monitoring of our ecosystems. Well, guess what? We were doing that in Wisconsin in 1979. So there were probably at the very beginning probably less than 200 volunteers. So it really was a mom and pop operation it was the Columbia County Survey, right? So just one county, less than 200 people counting cranes. Why? Because we had to know how many there were. If you really remember, conservation is really based on pretty small numbers of beings in the world. So that you actually have to find them and see them. And it's like anybody who studies birds, you have to actually have to spot them. And that really requires people to be on the ground. So the crane count started in 79, and it slowly expanded year after year so that it embraced more counties. And then it embraced more people, and it embraced more states, so that now it's more than 10 times that number of people are volunteers. Some 2,500 people volunteer to go out and count cranes. And why would we do that? Besides the fact that that's a good way to get a nice geographic distribution out in places where you can't send a biologist. Everybody can't be everywhere at once. But everybody is everywhere at once. As long as you open your eyes and your ears, you can count cranes. And that's a magically useful number. And if you do it year in and year out, you get this beautiful diachronic data set that moves over time from 1979. That's super powerful. You know how you're doing. Are you on mission? Are you off mission in conservation? But there's something more, which is that when everybody participates, it's only 2,000 people, but those people know 2,000 other people. And like I said, when you see a crane, you're changed forever. And suddenly you're worried about wetlands. And if there's something we're really good at in Wisconsin, it's taking care of wetlands, except when we're not. And so having everybody invested in the wetland project means like better clean water for people and better farming conditions and better communities and better livelihoods and better childhoods and better everything. So the crane count is, of course, it's about cranes, but it's really about caretaking the landscape in the state that we call Wisconsin.
I was thinking about those calls that we just listened to, and, you know, the whooping crane is endangered, the sandhill crane isn't. Can you tell us a little bit more? I mean, if someone goes on this crane count, can they hope to see a whooping crane? Why is that population not, you know, coming back at the same rate?
So, all right, so we got to the whoopers later than we got to the cranes. And remember, the cranes adapted really well to the changing agricultural landscape. I mean, you got to give the cranes some credit. The whooping crane is a tougher customer. The sandhill crane, did better. And it adapted well to the agricultural conditions. It does go out and glean. That can be a hazard for farmers, which is one of the reasons that we're discussing various ways of managing that problem. But it's just a very gregarious creature. I'm not a biologist. The whooping crane is a much harder nut to crack in terms of reintroduction. Most of the 70 whooping cranes that are out were bred. Did not crack out of an egg in the wild. Some 20 of the 70 or half of them, I don't know at this point. But let me say this, you can see them. So 12 years ago or 13 years ago when I first took this job, I just said, no, your chances are not very good to see a whooping crane if you're out on the crane count. Now I'd say your chances are pretty good. I mean, especially if you've got a good eye because they're flocking with the sandhills. So if you're looking for sandhills, you might spot some whooping cranes, and they're not hard to pick out with the black tips on the beautiful white wings. They're really a different looking animal. So, and I just saw two not long ago flying up around a farm up near Baraboo. I mean, these were wild whooping cranes, and there they were. They're out there. And when I took this job, like I said, I had never seen a whooping crane. I'd seen a lot of cranes. And I thought, whooping cranes, I'm never going to see a whooping crane. And I would peer when I was down at the plat, and is that a whooping? Maybe that's a whooping. Now, I think you can see them. So I don't want to get into the details of why it's been a hard return for the whooping crane, but we're making progress, and it's really important that we count them as well. So one of the reasons we renamed the count, it used to be named for the sandhill crane, and now we just call it the crane count, is because actually we are counting whooping cranes, and there's not a good chance, but there's a chance you can see one, so you should join.
So make your pitch. If there's someone who, you know, they don't think of themselves as a birder, they may or may not feel that they care about cranes, why should they go out and get out there?
You will meet some of the most interesting people you've ever met. And some of those people are human beings. People who choose to go out and do this are really a diverse bunch. They're like, some of them, you know, they come from all kinds of backgrounds. They come from the city. They come from the countryside. They're red. They're blue. What they care about, what brings them together, is the passion for the birds. You will meet people you've never met before. Don't worry about the animals. Don't forget the ecosystems. Don't worry. People, if you are very interested in meeting people and you're tired of meeting the same people, participate in something like the crane count, and you will meet people. The only thing they have in common may be that wonderful, beautiful bird. And that is more than enough. So that's the best argument. But even more so, the most interesting people you're meeting are going to be these cranes. These cranes are so gregarious. They're so funny. They are so like aware and so they're so interesting. And watching them take off and land and just to be able to see them, your heart will skip a beat. And they're just super interesting people, these cranes. So if you're a people person, you're a crane person.
Paul, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And that was Paul Robbins, Dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at UW-Madison.
He joined producer Rochelle Wilson in the studio last week to talk about the history of crane conservation in Wisconsin, why he loves these unique birds, and the role of citizen science.
The annual Midwest Crane Count takes place this Saturday. If you are interested in participating as a volunteer, you can learn more at savingcranes.org.